Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. This episode is sponsored by Luke's English Podcast Premium. That's my other podcast service. Sign up to my premium subscription to unlock over 80 video and audio episodes in the Luke's English Podcast app and online, in which I teach you vocab, grammar, and pronunciation. I upload new content each month. All episodes have a PDF with transcripts, tests, and answers. There are pronunciation drills for all the target language. At the moment, I'm preparing something about common phrases with the word devil, because I got inspired by doing this free episode about the number 666. There are lots of phrases in English with the word devil, and I've selected the ones which I think are commonly used these days. So that's the premium episode I'm working on at the moment. To unlock all the premium content in my app and on my website, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premiuminfo to sign up, or just go to my website and click premium in the menu. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello there, welcome back to episode 666 of Luke's English Podcast, in which my brother James and I are talking about scary and evil things. In the first two parts, we talked about the number 666, the devil in music, Black Sabbath. And then in part two, we described some genuinely frightening experiences that we've had in our lives. I'm glad to say that more comments have arrived on the website, and it's good to see that people have been enjoying this series. In this third and final part, the plan is to talk about scary films, including the first scary films we ever saw. Siri, I didn't ask you to do that. That's weird. Every time I say series, Siri thinks I'm talking to her. And my Siri is a female. I've chosen an Australian woman to be Siri for me. Hey Siri, I wasn't actually talking to you then.
I don't understand. Hey Siri, I wasn't actually talking to you then.
No,
please. I could search the web for it.
Don't search the web for it. Just go and have some Vegemite or something. Anyway, so what was I saying? So the plan is in this third part, the third part of this series. No? Okay. We're going to talk about scary films, including the first scary films we ever saw, why some people enjoy watching scary films, and then some descriptions of our favourite scary films. Now, I'm sure that not all of you are into films like this, but I hope that you can still enjoy listening to us describing them and talking about the effect that they had on us when we saw them. And I've been thinking, will you be able to identify the films that we're talking about? I expect that some of these films have different titles in your language. It's quite important that you know which films they are, even if you haven't seen them. So you might want to check them out quickly before you listen to this in order to identify them. You don't have to watch them all. I just want to be sure that you know which ones we're actually talking about. In fact, I'll give you the English titles now and very brief one-line descriptions, and you'll see that all these titles are listed on the page if you want to know the spelling. So you can hopefully work out which films these are, or you can Google them yourself, see if you recognise them, and see what they are called in your country. So here are the films which we mentioned during this conversation. Do you know which films they are, and do they have different titles in your language? So the first one is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one of the original horror slasher films from 1974 about a group of hippies who go on a road trip that ends badly when they're attacked by a weird family of cannibals in Texas, one of whom wields a chainsaw. What a lovely, lovely film. So that's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Then there is Children of the Corn from 1984. Not a very widely known film, to be honest. It was adapted from a Stephen King short story of the same name. The plot of the film is described by the Internet Movie Database, the IMDb, as a young couple is trapped in a remote town where a dangerous religious cult of children believes that everyone over the age of 18 must be killed. Another lovely film. It stars Linda Hamilton, who plays Sarah Connor in the Terminator films. That's The Children of the Corn. Do you know that one? You probably don't. It's not very well known. Then there's the film Jaws. Jaws. That is the 1975 Steven Spielberg film about a shark. It's an absolute classic and the most famous film about a shark ever. You must know which one that is. Think of it. What's the most well-known film about a shark? It's probably Jaws. In French, it's called The Teeth of the Sea. It's got famous music by John Williams. Anyway, Jaws. Then there's The Thing from 1982, directed by John Carpenter, starring Kurt Russell. The Internet Movie Database describes it like this. A research team in Antarctica is hunted by a shape-shifting alien that assumes the appearance of its victims. It was pointlessly remade a few years ago. The 1982 version is definitely the best one. Amazing and disturbing visual effects. That's The Thing. Then there's Alien from 1979, the original Alien film, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Sigourney Weaver. That's the one with the xenomorphs, face huggers and stuff. You know Alien, don't you? It spawned a whole franchise with sequels, including the more recent ones, Prometheus and Alien something. I actually can't remember what it was called, the more recent Alien film. Alien Misadventure or something. I did a whole podcast episode about it, actually. It's called Alien Covenant. That's it. Alien Covenant. What a terrible name. Alien Covent Garden would have been a much better film. Imagine that. Like, it's Covent Garden in London, but there's an alien. Ah, what should we do? Go shopping. No, I don't know. Buskers are getting killed and stuff. Ah, aliens in Covent Garden. That would be a brilliant film. Anyway, Alien, you know the one? Of course you do. There's also Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 2 from 1987, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Bruce Campbell. The IMDb describes it like this. The lone survivor of an onslaught of flesh-possessing spirits hides in a cabin with a group of strangers while the demons continue their attack. Okay, and then there's Ghostbusters. You know Ghostbusters, surely. 1984, directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Bill Murray. Three former parapsychology professors set up shop as a unique ghost removal service. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. You know, Ghostbusters. So those are the main films we talk about then. I hope you know which ones we mean. As well as the talk of films, there are a couple of other topics in this episode, including a story that James felt compelled to share with us from the business world of skateboarding about a skateboard with a famously controversial illustration on it. A picture of Satan in hell being evil. So a skateboard with a dangerous design, basically. That story is about, it's essentially about the power of superstition, I think. We also have a go at some armchair philosophy at the end as we consider the idea of whether humans have free will or not, and how this might affect the existence of evil in the world, and whether the existence of the devil can somehow confirm one's faith in the existence of God. If humans do bad things, is that because they're evil, or is there a more rational explanation for why people do bad things? Big questions, which we're not really qualified to answer, but we have a stab at it. Also, there's the legendary story of blues guitarist Robert Johnson from the 1930s, who, legend has it, sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads in return for amazing guitar playing technique and a mastery of the blues. The question there is, for what price would you sell your soul to the devil? So that's an overview of what's coming up. I say all that stuff just because it helps you to understand things. If you get a general overview, it'll help you understand the whole conversation. So I gave a warning at the start of part one of this, that you'd hear some weird and frightening sounds at some moments during the episode. I'd like to say that again now. You will hear some weird and frightening sounds at some moments in this episode, because we play some audio from some of those horror films, and of course they contain some frightening noises. So be ready to hear some banging or crashing sounds, some scratching and scraping sounds, ominous voices, the sound of a chainsaw, some screaming, and other disturbing noises. Okay? Apologies again for James's microphone cutting out a bit during the episode. I hope it's not too distracting for you. So if you are ready and prepared, mentally, physically, and spiritually, and not feeling too sensitive, let's continue with the final part of episode 666. And here we go. Okay, let's talk about scary films, because scary films are scary and being scared is fun, especially in the context of just an entertaining film. Being scared makes you feel more alive, doesn't it?
I was thinking about this when we started, you know, talking about doing this podcast, and I was trying to work out why horror films are attractive. And I thinking of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, why would you watch it in the first place? I think that every time I see it, halfway through, I'm like, why am I watching this?
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, that's sort of my most favorite, or the scariest film that I think I've seen that I liked. I say liked, you know what I mean? Had an effect on me. And I think it's because all the characters are desperate to live. And that's kind of comes over, you know, you want them to live. They're desperate to live. It's they're clinging onto life, and they're in great peril, but they just want to stay alive. And that's like
survival. Survival. It's what life is about.
Life affirming.
Hmm.
And it gives you a thrill to sort of be vicariously close to peril or fear or death. And we can go through some of those emotions, not to the full extent, but you can go through some of those emotions and then come out of it at the other end and the lights come on and you're alive and you're fine. But I suppose you do get a basic primal thrill from being scared, yeah.
I think Mark Kermode, the film critic who we both like, and who's a huge fan of horror films, he says that basically being scared makes you feel more alive. It's a sort of life-affirming experience.
And it must be some of the first ever films must have been horror films. I mean, it must go with the medium.
Well, the first ever film was the shot of a train coming towards the camera. And apparently the people in the cinema got up from their seats and ran because they were so scared by the... But it was the, yeah. You know, they'd never seen film before, first of all, and the train coming towards them was so realistic that they had a very visceral reaction.
And it's been said before, but the kind of the process of projecting a film is kind of ghost-like. It's similar to how they used to do ghost shows in the Victorian era. They used to project onto glass. Same thing that they do with what they call holograms now, which aren't bloody holograms. Limmy will tell you more about that. They're not holograms. They're projections onto like perspex or glass or something. And the kind of process of film is kind of quite ghostly, you know, and you can kind of, you're projecting these images of sometimes dead people onto the wall, you know, or people captured at a certain time.
Yeah.
There's something, some parallel there somehow between film and the idea of a ghost, of this kind of captured memory.
The spirit, projected in the air, the light projected. It is the spirit, essentially.
It's a sort of vision of the past that's brought into the present.
Captured, like their soul has been captured and then...
Yeah, a magic process.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's spooky. Generally, cinema is spooky. But okay, scary films then. Shall we talk about some of our favourite scary films? You mentioned the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Let's start with the first film. I mean, let's start with the first time you saw a scary film, you personally. What do you remember? What first scared you?
Well, I think the first scary film that we both saw was Jaws.
Well, actually, I saw a horror film when I was a child. I saw two, actually, that disturbed me.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
Same friend that had all those heavy metal albums and a load of Robert Crumb comics, I should point out. Very bad influence, this kid. Somehow, when I was at his house, I saw some of Children of the Corn, which is a Stephen King adaptation. And I saw it again recently, and I can see why, as a child, it really freaked me out, because it's really nasty. And the music's kind of edgy and scary. The children are sort of demonic. It's a kind of horror film of, like, a kind of society of, I don't know what they're, country-dwelling cult or something, I don't know. But they basically hack a lot of people up with scythes, which is, you know, quite a nasty implement as well. And I saw this as a child, and it really disturbed me.
In the film, isn't it about sacrifice, that they take people from the village and sacrifice them to the Children of the Corn? And the Children of the Corn, I mean, I don't know the plot of the film, but something about that.
Well, I didn't watch it properly, but it just, the whole atmosphere of it freaked me out. I don't think there was any particular scene that scared me, but it was the atmosphere of, I don't think I'd seen something that was outwardly trying to scare you in a media form like that, apart from like Doctor Who, which is for kids. But yeah, it's the first time we've seen this is really trying to disturb me, and I don't like it.
Yeah, something malevolent about that. And it's, you know, for adults it's okay, because we watch it because we want to be scared. But for a child who's sort of unwittingly watching something that they don't really know, what they're still working out the world, then yeah, that's pretty disturbing.
I didn't think it was real or anything. It was just the atmosphere was so nasty and psychological, you know, kind of trying to get to you.
I remember when you saw it, I remember we were living in Ealing when we were kids, so I must have been about 7 or 8 years old. You would have been about 8 or 9 or something like that. And I remember you telling me that you'd seen it. I remember the name, The Children of the Corn. I distinctly remember you telling me that you'd seen this film and that it had scared you and it was really scary, and you tried to explain the plot to me. I remember you saying something about things coming through the corn.
Yeah, they were like, the kids were kind of, it wasn't, I can't bloody remember, but there was some kind of massacre in a cornfield or some sort of horrible slash situation.
So I remember you telling me about it, but you weren't kind of like, oh, I saw a film. You know, you weren't like that. It was more like you were just sort of trying to work out what you'd seen, and you were quite affected by it. Rather than really scared, it was more like, I saw this thing and it was really, really weird, and you were trying to kind of come to terms with it.
Okay, so maybe I wasn't quite as scared as I thought. I was just, scared, but not like staying up all night crying or anything.
Well, maybe because you are my older brother, and when you told me about it, you kind of, you know, you didn't want to scare me.
Or I was putting a cool spin on it, like, hey, I saw this film, I wasn't scared.
Yeah, maybe. For me, Jaws, because we both saw that. I remember Dad really wanted to watch Jaws with us, but they were both very kind of cautious and very, how do I say it? They were both like, oh, are you sure? Do you think that the boys are ready for this? And they decided that we could watch it. And it was great. It was scary. The scariest part was at the beginning when the girl's in the water and she's like, come on in, the water's lovely. And then she gets got by the shark. You don't see the shark. You just see her being dragged around in the water.
Really violently.
And the thing that sort of made the impression on me was the fact that Dad then said, are you sure that you want to watch this? And that's what kind of made me scared. Like, the woman getting dragged around in the water was definitely disturbing, but I was like, oh, this is quite exciting. But when Dad turned and said, are you sure you want to watch this? Then it was like, oh, now I'm a bit scared.
It's a bit like in those old films where they'd say, if you do not want to witness scenes of graphic nature, turn away now. And it'd be like, they don't really want you to turn away. They're just saying, this is going to really scare you.
Yeah, they're trying to make you suggestible and scared. And, you know, it's all about the preparing the expectations of the audience and stuff. So, but Jaws was really great. I mean, it was scary, but it was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. But I do remember then going upstairs and walking through the house and being like, oh, there are sharks, there are sharks. You know, when you're a child, you kind of imagine things.
Yeah. And even flushing the loo, you'd be like, oh, water, what if a shark came out?
Yeah. And then as kids, we were kind of obsessed with sharks and stuff, obviously. And we used to say, what would you do if a shark came flying through the window right now? We would like go through these hypothetical situations like, what would you do if? And there was always a shark involved.
But Jaws is quite scary. It's only a PG, isn't it?
No. No way is Jaws a PG. PG, listeners, is parental guidance. It's a certification for, you know, an age rating for a film.
I think it's a lot scarier than its rating. The bit that gets me is when all the kids come in from the water and there's one that doesn't come in.
Mm.
And the mum's really upset.
Mm.
That's horrible.
You see a very brief shot of a shape in the water attacking the boy. You see he's on a raft, on a like a sunbathing raft that you'd have in a swimming pool, and you see in the distance like a kind of a white shape,
a flipper or something.
Yeah, like a flipper in the water, or maybe part of the shark or something, and you see a lot of blood in the water. And that's the clever thing about Jaws is that they never explicitly show you things except at the end.
But they do at the end.
They do at the end when Quint gets killed. Spoiler alert! But
I saw that in the cinema a while ago, and it's all great fun. And the music is very John Williams. It is John Williams, isn't it?
Probably.
It's like very rousing all the way through, and it's like, here's the adventure bit, you know, da 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 da, da, and they're all off to sea for an adventure, and then there's the peril bits, you know, there's a shark, and then there's the famous theme of the shark, da, 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 da. And then for the final scene where, what's his name, Quint?
Yeah.
All the music just stops, and it's just silence, and all you can hear is like water, a shark like chomping its way up the boat, bits of wood breaking off, and he's like fingernails like scraping down the deck as he like falls into this shark's mouth,
and then him screaming in the way that he'd described earlier in the film. He talks about the sound of his fellow naval
sailors,
his fellow sailors during World War II, the Indianapolis, which a famous boat that was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine, and it slowly sank, and all the guys on the boat had to jump into the water, and they actually got eaten by tiger sharks. And he tells the story. I've got to play that clip. It's brilliant.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the USS Indianapolis scene, and he does a speech. It's brilliant. But I think in this speech he talks about the sound that the guys made when they were being eaten by the sharks, and they were screaming. It's a blood-curdling scream. And it pays off, because when Quint finally does get taken out by this horrible shark that's chasing them, he makes the same blood-curdling scream. And as you say, there's no music. It's just silence and just this horrible screaming sound. And you see the blood coming from his mouth and stuff. It's, yeah, really scary stuff. Brilliant direction. Steven Spielberg, what a genius.
Can you make sure that you're sharing sound with me as well? Because I didn't get it last time.
Yeah, let me just do that. Let me make sure I'm sharing my screen. Yeah, the music was by John Williams, by the way. Of course it was. He did all the best stuff. Okay, here we go.
Japanese submarine slammed two torpedoes into our side.
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute.
Fantastic.
Hold on a minute. So they say, here's the thing, right? Just to set up the scene. The three of them are on the boat. They've been searching for the shark. They can't find it. They can't get it.
They've
started drinking. It's nighttime. They're in the boat and they're drinking and they've been singing and stuff. And then it all gets a bit serious because they start comparing scars. And there's like a competition of like who's got the biggest scar. And then Quint tells the story of a scar that he's got, or he tells the story of you know, when he was on the USS Indianapolis and it was hit by a Japanese submarine, and this is what happens.
Japanese submarine slammed two torpedoes into our side, Chief. He was coming back From the island of Tinian Delady, just delivered the bomb. The Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. Tiger, 13-footer. You know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. Well, we didn't know. Was our bomb mission had been so secret. No distress signal had been sent. They didn't even list us overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it's kind of like old squares in a battle, like you see in a calendar, like the Battle of Waterloo, and the idea was, shark comes the nearest man, that man, he start pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark, he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes at you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white, and then... Oh, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red, and in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, they all come in and they rip you to pieces. By the end of that first dawn, lost 100 men. I don't know how many sharks, maybe 1,000. I don't know how many men, they average 6 an hour. On Thursday morning, Chief, I bumped into a friend of mine, Herbie Robinson from Cleveland. Baseball player, bosun's mate. I thought he was asleep. Reached over to wake him up. Bobbed up and down in the water. It was like a kind of top. Upended. Well, he'd been bitten in half below the waist. Noon the fifth day, Mr. Hooper, Lockheed Ventura, so as he swung in low and he saw us to the young pilot, a lot younger than Mr. Hooper anyway, he saw us and he come in low, and 3 hours later a big fat PBY comes down and start to pick us up. You know, that was the time I was most frightened, waiting for my turn. I'll never put on a life jacket again. So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out, the sharks took the rest, June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Oh, dark at the end. Anyway, we delivered the bomb. But yeah, 11,000 men, 1,100 men went in the water and 316 came out. It's a true story, actually, that the USS Indianapolis, all the guys got eaten by sharks. Oh. So Jaws, yeah, I mean, it makes our parents sound a bit irresponsible showing us Jaws. According to the BBFC, that's the British Board of Film Classification, Jaws is a 12A, which means that I think that children of 12 years old can see the film accompanied by an adult. We were younger than that. I must have been about eight or nine at the time. Yeah. But I'm all right, aren't I? I'm okay. No?
Got over the phobia of sharks.
It says, according to the BBFC, it includes, contains moderate threat and an occasional gory moments.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Bit of blood and stuff like that. So Jaws, but then after Jaws, I mean, it wasn't until I was probably about 12 or 13 that I saw my first properly scary film, like an 18-rated film. And the film I saw was The Thing, directed by John Carpenter, starring Kurt Russell. You know the film.
Fantastic film.
So, I guess I was about 12, maybe 13. And so my friend who lived up the road from us, His dad had all these pirate videos.
Video nasties. Well, probably not video nasties, actually. We'll go into those later.
He probably had a few video nasties too, I imagine, but we didn't get to see them. But he had some films that, you know, hadn't been released on VHS yet in the UK. I don't know where he got them, imported, like pirated videos. And so The Thing was one of those, RoboCop, The Running Man. And I remember watching The Thing. And The Thing, if anyone's seen it, is, I mean, it's an amazing film. It's one of my favorite films, but it's extremely scary. It's about a monster from space that infects a group of guys working on some kind of research base up in the Arctic Circle somewhere. And The Thing is, how can you explain it? Go on, you try.
It's a shapeshifter. So it takes on the form of the person that it's like inhabiting, or absorbs their essence, their DNA, and can shapeshift to form. Yeah, to take on the form of the thing that it's absorbed.
But the thing is that when it changes from one form to the other, its appearance is like really, really, really scary and like hallucinogenic or something. It's so frightening. And the special effects that were – the guys who did the special effects did an amazing job. And also they edited it so well that you don't see – it's, again, clever editing where you see stuff for a while, but they cut the camera away before you get a chance to really understand what you're looking at. But there's lots of tentacles and things moving and very, very weird and scary gore and monsters and stuff.
Like mouths can come from nowhere. The guy's stomach turns into a mouth at one point, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're trying to resuscitate him with the whatever those things are, the what's it called?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Hello, the word that we're looking for here is defibrillators. You know those things that you often see in hospitals? They're used to start someone's heart with a very powerful electric shock. Two things, they're held in each hand, pressed against the chest of the person who you're trying to resuscitate, and then a powerful electric shock is delivered. They're called defibrillators.
Those electric things, and they're going to put it into his chest, and his chest opens up and he eats the guy's hands with this thing.
And the guy's arms come off at the elbow and you know, other stuff like that.
Pretty extreme stuff, but it's brilliant physical effects. There's no CGI at all. And the premise is really good. I like when they first discover the alien spacecraft in a big trench or a big hole in the snow. And it's, you know, been there for millions of years. It's one of these really eerie moments. It's a bit like
Alien.
H.P. Lovecraft, actually, who's a horror writer who specializes in the kind of describing the indescribable is what he apparently does. And he does things like describe colors that don't exist. And or there's one called A Color from Space, which has been made into a very silly Nick Cage film, which is quite fun. Where he says, I call it a color only because it's the closest thing I could describe it to.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a color, but not a color. It's something else.
Yeah.
So that kind of really mysterious, indescribable stuff goes into quite a lot of horror films. That kind of,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like Alien, the Alien films, like the first Alien film where it takes you the whole film to work out what you've seen.
And in Alien, what I like about it is the sort of setup of they're just in space in the middle of nowhere. And the way they show space, it's like a godless universe. There's nothing good out there. You know, it's just a scary, dark place full of things you can't imagine.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Four years ago, in this quiet forest, in this cozy cabin, something happened. Something so frightening. Something so deadly. Something so evil. We prayed it would never happen again. Now, from the creator of Evil Dead, comes Evil Dead 2. Dawn.
Are you all right, listeners? That was the trailer for Evil Dead 2. And a 1987 American comedy horror, it says here on Wikipedia, film directed by Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi later went on to direct the Spider-Man films, the ones with Tobey Maguire.
Didn't he direct Ghostbusters as well?
No. That's Harold Ramis, isn't it? Hello, I need to interrupt here again to do a little bit of fact-checking. So Ghostbusters wasn't directed by Sam Raimi or Harold Ramis, although Harold Ramis was one of the actors. He plays the part of Egon Spengler. Ghostbusters was actually directed by Ivan Reitman. And Ghostbusters actually had some pretty scary scenes in it too. It was actually a comedy. I remember that James and I went to see it in the cinema when we were kids. It's a comedy, but it had some pretty scary moments in it too. Like there's a bit at the beginning where the professors, the Ghostbusters themselves, first encounter a ghost. And it's an old woman looking at books in a library and they try to approach it. And the woman turns round and she turns into a really horrible, scary monster for a moment and they run out of the library. And I remember that always used to give us a big scare and we used to get very excited by that scene. So anyway, Ghostbusters, directed by Ivan Reitman. But anyway, Evil Dead 2 then.
Yes, Evil Dead 2, amazing film. Do you remember when you first saw that?
Yeah, I first saw that on TV. It was there was like a zombie night on television in, it must have been 1998, I reckon. And I was in Liverpool in my university student house with all my student mates, my housemates. And it was zombie night on TV and they showed some zombie films, including Evil Dead 2. Although Evil Dead 2 is not really zombies. It's possessed. It's like evil spirits that possess people. But it's, so it's not zombies at all. But anyway, I watched that and I thought it was... I didn't realize it was funny until about halfway through the film. And then I started to realize it was hilarious. And it was kind of almost like a Jim Carrey film or something, but with ridiculous levels of horror and gore.
Very slapstick and lots of gross out humor.
Yes, that's right. It's probably got a different title in different countries and stuff like that.
It's not a sequel. It's a remake.
No, it is. The first 15 minutes are a remake of Evil Dead 1, and then the rest of it is a sequel to Evil Dead 1. So it just repeats the entire story of Evil Dead 1 in the first 15 minutes, remakes it, summarizes it in 15 minutes, and then it carries on where Evil Dead 1 left off. But it's okay. It pushes the comedy a lot more and the slapstick a lot more than in Evil Dead 1. Evil Dead 1 was more of a straight-ahead, scary film about people in a log cabin in the woods being possessed by evil spirits.
By evil forces. And it was very, very, very low budget. Evil Dead 2 is low budget, but even more so for the first one.
Yes, that's right. And the thing about Evil Dead 2 is, well, what's the storyline? Can you remember?
He's taking his girlfriend away for a romantic weekend in a log cabin, but I can't remember. Is it her granddad's cabin? I think it's the girl's.
No, it's not. I think that it's not really fully explained. It's almost like they're trespassing in that he knows about this log cabin that's empty. He's decided to take his girlfriend there for a romantic weekend or something, but we don't know how they know it's there. It's just like they're saying stuff like, the people who own this cabin are going to be away for ages, don't worry, it's fine.
Yeah, well, it's not fine.
Yeah. And but the log cabin is owned by a professor
It's quite a good premise the way they summon the demon, because they find an old tape machine and they play it, and on the tape machine is a recording of the guy reading out from this book, the Book of the Dead, Necronomicon, and Ex Mortis. And because they play the tape recording, it summons the demons anyway, even if it's just a tape off a tape.
Right. The guy who owns the cabin is an archaeologist, Raymond Noby, who has been in researching all this kind of evil history and stuff. And yes, the Book of the Dead. He's managed to find the Book of the Dead, as you said, Necronomicon Ex Mortis. He discovered it in an archaeological dig, and he's an expert on it. And he's done these recordings on a reel-to-reel tape, full of incantations and stuff. And Ash discovers Ash is the character, the main character in the story. He discovers the book and the tape recorder, and he presses play. And yeah, and he hears the voice of the archaeologist professor reading out the incantations, which exactly summon evil spirits. Which then kind of torment him for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
But it's the funny thing about it, one of the funny things about it is the intensity of it. So it's just, mostly it's just our main character played by Bruce Campbell, who is a brilliant comic actor, really. He's brilliant at slapstick humor, which is why I felt it was like a Jim Carrey film. I thought that Jim Carrey must have seen this film and it inspired him or something. Anyway, there's the slapstick humor of Bruce Campbell, but also it's just this guy trapped in almost like a single room or in a log cabin, and the entire film is so self-contained in just one space. But yet it's so intense that it's like madness. It's like this growing, rolling sense of madness, a bit like when you are trapped in one room for a long period of time.
And the sound design is like just brilliant. You can hear it in that trailer, but the amount of sounds they've created or, you know, mixed out of nothing. I don't know how they did it. But, you know, someone says to you, well, we need a sound of like a portal to an evil dimension. And what? How would you do that? And it's loads of down-tuned voices going, oh, mixed in with like,
yeah, and tons of actually really innovative visual effects done on a very low budget. So the way that they did the spirits, the evil spirits that were suddenly summoned and would approach the log cabin, it was a camera on a piece of wood, and they just. Like the piece of wood, it was a long plank of wood with the camera in the middle, which allowed them to create a sort of a steady cam. So the camera's not bouncing around all the time because it's held steady by the width of the wood, right? And so they just ran along, literally ran along, or they had it on the front of a bike or car or something, this camera that was steady, and it was like this low, essentially it creates this low shot of like the evil spirit rushing across the low to the ground towards the cabin with those sounds. Oh, and it's actually very funny because the evil spirits have got almost like a little funny personality of their own. Like they chase Ash, there's one point where they chase him through the log cabin and he's like...
Do they do that? And he breaks through several doors backwards as like away from the camera, you, and you're watching his face as he's like running backwards through this house, crashing through doors, and it goes through the whole house and out the other side.
It's like the camera is chasing him around, and it's amazing the way they actually did that, where he rushes through every room of this log cabin, breaking through walls and doors and things. But it becomes like one of those sequences from Tom and Jerry, you know, when Tom is chasing Jerry around a chair, and they're going round and round and round in circles, and then Jerry jumps up on top of the chair, but Tom is still like running round until he realizes that he's not actually chasing Jerry anymore. The camera, the evil spirit, which is, and in fact the camera and the way it's directed, is chasing Ash, but then Ash disappears, and the camera's then like where is he gone? And you see him looking left and right, the evil spirit can't find him, and he's like, well, I'll just give up then, and he leaves the cabin and sort of disappears again. So he's got like the film is punctuated by these episodes of Ash being chased or having to fight with some demon and then sort of managing to fend the demon off. And then there's a quiet period where it's kind of like, this is crazy. And then they come back and they fight him again. So, yeah, lots of very kinetic camera work. The camera moving around in really inventive ways. Lots of spinning around and moving quick cuts and edits and things like that. And tons and tons and tons of very cheap like latex models, and combined with bits of stop motion animation, and to create really, really gruesome, really ridiculous monsters.
And it's really creative. Like, remember when his hand gets infected or possessed, and he's like taking a rest. He's like, he's got a shotgun on his lap. He's like, right, okay, just relax. And he's starting to nod off, and his hand wakes up and looks over, and he sees he's falling asleep, and his hand starts slowly moving towards him, like to kill him, his own hand. And obviously it's just him moving his hand, but it really looks like a little another creature.
It's actually a kind of a slapstick comedy. It's like, once you get beyond the fact that it's really disgusting and quite scary, it's very, very funny.
One thing that I think is funny is the kind of demons and stuff sometimes talk a bit like Groucho Marx or something. They're going to go, "I'll swallow your soul, I'll swallow your soul." Or some sort of like New York wise guy. Like the voices, like sometimes they're evil and they're like, "I'll swallow your soul." And some of them are like, "I'll swallow your soul, I'll swallow your soul.
Hey, come over here. Yeah, look here, you. I'm going to swallow your soul, see?" Yeah, they're kind of like old fashioned. They speak in this old fashioned way. It's really funny. We can't really talk about it anymore because,
just go and watch it. I mean, it is quite scary. I mean, there's a bit at which it kind of gets really weird when he looks at himself in the mirror and he's going, "It's all right, it's okay." And he's going, and his reflection talks back to him going, "You just cut up your girlfriend with a chainsaw. Does that sound all right to you?" And then reaches through the mirror and grabs him. And that sequence freaked me out.
It's very, very weird and like a horrible bad dream. You don't know if he's just experiencing it on his own or if it really is happening, if he's just imagining it like a bad dream or it's real. So it's
bits where it kind of snaps back to reality as well. Like he'll be sitting there and it'll kind of go all normal for a bit. And then it'll go weird again. It's a very strange film.
Yep. But good value, so we recommend The Evil Dead 2 if you like that kind of thing.
Hey, you know where the old Franklin place is?
The old Franklin place?
Yeah, it's an old two-story rock house and it's sitting up on a hill. I think you have to turn on that road back there, but I'm not real sure.
Yeah, maybe I seen something like that up that way. When I look, you boys don't want to go mess around no old house. But those things is dangerous. You're liable to get hurt.
We'll be careful.
You don't want to go fooling around other folks' property. Some folks don't like it, and they don't mind showing you.
Now, you wanted to talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, not everyone finds it scary, but I think it's my favorite film that genuinely scares me.
When was it actually made? And, you know, give us the context of when the film was made. Otherwise, we're talking about it in a vacuum.
It was made by this guy, Toby Hooper, I think.
1974. Okay. Toby Hooper.
It was low budget. It was based very loosely on kind of serial killers and things like that, people that did exist. Ed Gein, I think, was part of the inspiration for it. It was one of these guys that made people into lamps and things.
The serial killer who then took the corpses of his victims and took their skin off and used their skin to make things. Really horrible stuff. It also, the same serial killer was the inspiration behind the film Psycho.
Right. It was another one of those kind of end of the 60s kind of movies, I think. You know, a bit like Black Sabbath, that kind of evil vibe that came after the sort of idealism of the 60s. But it's basically a really simple story. Some teenagers are driving again in a van. It's a bit like Scooby-Doo. In fact, Scooby-Doo is probably taken from the premise. Load of teenagers in a van driving somewhere, as they always are, to do something teenagery. And first of all, some weirdo, they give him a lift. And that's another kind of hippie thing. Like, hey, let's give him a lift. Hey, cool. Yeah, cool. And maybe, you know, the Manson family was part of the inspiration. And this guy's just not cool. And he's very scary. He leaves, but then I think they've run out of petrol, the usual thing. The group split up and half of them go off to the house to look for petrol. And the other two, one of whom's in a wheelchair, stay behind. And that's when it starts to get scary, because you know when you get split up from somebody or you like you've arranged to meet someone and they don't turn up, or people go off and then they don't come back, and you're waiting for ages and ages, and you start to think, oh, they'll be, you know, it's a bit different now with phones, but before mobile phones, you'd be like, they'll be along soon, don't worry, you know. And then you wait a bit longer, wonder where they are, you know. And then as it gets, you start to slightly think of like worst case scenarios, you know. And this is like the ultimate worst case scenario.
Because what's happened, they end up like going to an old house. They're out in the middle of nowhere in America somewhere.
You can guess from the title the kind of thing we're talking about.
But basically they end up at an old house and they're like, we need to get some help from the locals, but the locals aren't friendly.
Yeah, so I think we should play the trailer just to set the scene. This is another one where the sound design was really innovative for the time.
Is this the trailer or is this just some sound effects?
I think this is some sound effects from the trailer. This is from the re-release trailer. It's not the original trailer, but it's got good examples of all the sound effects in here. And there's kind of things like bones and chicken feathers and, you know, fly noises and just really creepy, horrible things that you don't want to go anywhere near.
Atmospheric sound effects.
Yeah, have a listen.
Okay. Actually, it makes me think of some computer games that have definitely taken inspiration from that.
I think that's been a bit enhanced because it's a re-release thing. You know, it's been, they've slightly boosted some of those, but all those are sound effects from the film. And when you see it, I mean, I went to see it. I think I might have said this on your podcast before, but went to see it in the cinema with a friend of mine on Halloween a few years ago. And the cinema was full and I've seen it loads of times, but I don't think I've seen it in cinema before. It was an original print, so it was a 1970s print in the reel, you know, being projected. So it's all grainy and crackly, and it's kind of very atmospheric because you're like, fuck, this is actually the original print from the time. And it makes it even more grimy in a way because the print's like jumping around and it feels like illicit somehow. And it was flipping terrifying. Like halfway through the first really scary bit, my mate just turned around to me with a just look of just like, what are you, why are we going to see this? Because he was like, oh, I've never seen it before. I was like, it's quite scary. It's not that scary. You've seen 18s before, right? And he was not prepared for how full on it was.
Because the thing about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is that everybody knows the name, or certainly people of our generation, we all know the name. It's like a well-known name. And yet people don't necessarily know what the film is really like. So I expect a lot of people went to the cinema going, hey, let's go and see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. But it's actually a really gritty, genuinely disturbing and scary film. It's not one of those kind of, it's not like one of the 80s. It's like not like one of those horror films from the 80s, a slasher film like the Freddy Krueger movies or Jason or something like that. It's a lot more serious and dark than that.
I mean, they're just sort of like these sort of cannibalistic rednecks that live in a farm somewhere. It's not like Supernatural or anything.
Yeah, it's just humanity gone wrong and unfriendly people who live on their own in the middle of nowhere, and they've gone wrong. They've gone bad.
Oh, it's making me feel creepy just thinking about it. I mean, there's a few bits that it's very nasty. And the thing is, though, you don't actually see that much actual stuff happening. It's mainly cutaways and clever cuts, basically. And you think you've seen things that you really haven't seen, but it's... Oh.
Sorry, we've talked about gory, disgusting stuff like The Thing and Evil Dead 2 and all that stuff. But really, the most effective horror films are the ones that work on your mind and don't necessarily show you explicitly the horrible stuff, but they just sort of let your mind do the work.
Yeah, I mean, one of the worst bits in Texas Chainsaw Massacre for me, there's a few really bad bits that are small details. Like, she's kind of gone through it a lot, one of the main characters, and she gets sort of half rescued, and she thinks she might be safe, but she's not sure. And the sheriff guy goes off to, like, get help or whatever. But he leaves her on her own with the door open of this cabin, and there's something just really scary about this empty door. Like, you don't know if that guy's going to come in any second and just kill her.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just an empty door, and, like, there was sounds in the cinema of people going, oh... You know, that's mainly girls, I have to say, but there were a few involuntary noises going on, like, oh, God, and things like that throughout the film.
Yeah, it's not like in one of those fun, modern jump scare movies like Paranormal Activity, where people are like, kind of giggling, and it's like, you know, that kind of scary. Instead, it's genuine. People are genuinely disturbed, like, oh God.
And there's another bit right at the end where she's just about to escape, and she's trying to get into this truck, and her leg's broken, and she can't get into the truck. And it's like, that was one where people were losing it in the cinema, just going, oh, God, you know, like.
Yeah, the horror of
fucking scary.
You're running for your life. You're trying to climb into the back of a truck in order to save your life, but because your leg is broken, you can't get in, and you keep falling over and trying again and again. Meanwhile, there's a guy with a chainsaw somewhere down the road who is coming. It really is the stuff of nightmares. I mean,
every time I watch it halfway through, I think, why am I watching this? What is wrong with me? Why am I doing this to myself? And I thought that, I mean, there was times where I don't have much hair left, but I could feel it standing on end, you know, like it's a physical feeling.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's why we do it.
It's computer games now. That's all that stuff. All those things that were done in, for example, the 70s horror films, they've all been taken and put into computer games, like the Resident Evil series. Resident Evil 4, I think, was the one that introduced people with chainsaws that would come rushing towards you. And it's really, really, really scary in the game. Very well-designed games now that sort of use those cinematic effects in the game. Brilliant, exciting games.
I feel creeped out just thinking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, it's really disturbing and dark. Because it's because the group of kids, or they're not really kids, they're like teenagers or whatever, they're all hippies and they're all into flower power. Hey man, it's like let's go to the lake and we'll go camping at the lake. And then this, and you know, it's the same thing that you said about Alien. It's basically a godless universe. And
yeah, that's a good point. It is a kind of a bit like, you know, all these hippie dreams you've got, well, they don't stand for shit, boy.
Yeah, because there are dark pockets of humanity out there.
There are dark forces out there that you can't understand or control. Sleep well.
Sleep well, everybody. Have nightmares. Get sleep paralysis. If you do wake up in the middle of the night and you're frozen in bed and you can't move, but you feel like there's someone there, don't worry. You've just got sleep paralysis. or there is really an evil spirit standing over you and using dark magic to prevent you from moving and opening your eyes. It's either one or the other, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to speculate. it's time for my skate diversion now, right?
Okay, so this is let me say this. So you were adamant that you needed to include this story about skateboards. Okay, so those of you who are long-term listeners will know that James is a skateboard enthusiast, into skateboarding, and so you need to do this story about skateboards. So I'll just let you tell the story. Go ahead, skateboard story.
Have you got the clip at the ready?
I have got the clip at the ready. Do we not need to give some detail about the clip before we listen?
Right. All right. So this is a clip from a documentary called The Man Who Sold the World, but that's sold as in S-O-U-L-E-D.
Shoes. The man,
as in your soul, you know.
Oh, I see.
And who sold the world. Also a David Bowie song. And it's a documentary about a period of skateboarding in the early 90s and late 80s, early 90s, where a small group of companies basically took over the entire market in a very short period of time, in like 1 or 2 years, and completely kind of crushed Pal Peralta, Vision, and Santa Cruz, in terms of sales and sort of, you know, market dominance at a time where they were selling lots of skateboards and it was quite big money enterprise. But it was a kind of slightly anarchistic company, well, very anarchistic company, that kind of, the reason they were so successful is they kind of didn't do everything that everyone else did. So it's kind of a bit of a business story, because a lot of people are into that these days, kind of disruption, they call it. Disrupt the market and you come out on top. So you switch everything up, change all the rules, which is, you know, can be used for evil. But this is a story about a skateboard graphic drawn by Mark McKee, who was one of their main artists, and their graphics were a really big part of skateboards.
The picture on the bottom of the skateboard.
It's a really big deal. It's like a whole sort of, even though as soon as you get it, you scrape it off and it's ruined. But that's kind of part of the appeal as well. You know, they're supposed to be temporary, and they are kind of, you know, they used to be all screen printed, which is quite a labor intensive process. They're really beautiful objects. If you don't skate them, they last forever. You know, screen printed skateboard is just a work of art. Anyway, this is about a graphic. So with that said, let's play the clip.
We're just two nerds, like, just drawing all day long.
People always used to, you know, you guys are a pussy company, you just do cartoons, you're not hardcore like us.
And I look at their boards, and what is so hardcore about, like, a skull? You look at a Pusshead graphic and go, who cares? Like, well, that's scary. That's not evil. And so I'm talking to Mark and go, man, let's make something that is truly evil.
I am going to have to stop it, just because otherwise there's a danger that people won't really understand. So their company, they look at the competition, this established company like Pal Peralta, and they have got some skulls in their designs. Well,
what Rocco is saying there, he's the boss, Steve Rocco. He's saying that people were accusing them of being, in his words, a pussy company. I wouldn't use that term myself, because they don't have skulls and stuff on their graphics. They just have cartoons and kind of, you know, playful stuff, which is true. Even though the cartoons are pretty crazy, they were many cartoon-based kind of graphic look. And he was claiming that companies were taking the piss, kind of saying your company's soft, you know, you don't have any hardcore graphics.
Okay, and they said, okay, then if that's what you think, let's do some hardcore graphics.
Mark McKee does this thing, comes back, unveils it, and it is both barrels.
It's both barrels.
Just gnarly. It's got the and Jason's looking, he's like,
we need to describe what the board looks like, no?
You notice the way Rodney Mullen there, he's the world-famous freestyler and co-owner of World Industries. He starts to say what it is, and he doesn't.
He starts to describe the design on the board, but then he doesn't.
And he cuts himself off. So he doesn't even want to describe it. But it's basically, for one thing, it's upside down, which is quite satanic, the graphic. It's Satan in hell.
Wait a minute. As if, like, Satan's like, whoa, you know what? Upside down things.
It was supposed to be a joke anyway, you know, so that's just another level. It's a picture of Satan in hell in full color with lots of dead people hanging on strings, and it's just generally really, really evil. And I think there's various religious leaders hanging from something. And it's got 666 on it. It's got a pentagram on it.
We're just two nerds.
Oh, like, sorry. It's got 666, got a pentagram, all the devil's cliches.
Boxes, but it is actually quite scary. I remember seeing it at the time in about 1991. And they showed it me in Ideal, which is a skate shop that's still going in Birmingham. And I was kind of thinking, fuck, I think they might have gone a bit too far with this one.
Right, okay.
There's something about it very nasty and scary.
Okay.
This thing comes back, unveils it, and it is both barrels. It's just gnarly. It's got the... And Jason's looking, he's like...
So this is a board for Jason Lee.
Jason Lee, this is a time where sometimes they could choose their own graphics and sometimes Rocco would just give them a graphic of his own choosing.
But the
and this one was like, hey, Jason, we've got your new graphic. And it was this Satan board. And that happens to be Jason Lee, who's now an actor in Hollywood. He's in My Name is Earl. Which and is- the Chipmunks movies, I believe.
Alvin and the Chipmunks. Yeah.
He's Alvin.
Yeah, he's now an actor. He's in some TV shows and films and things, Jason Lee. Okay.
Jason Lee's reaction.
Okay. Jason Lee, the skater who was supposed to get the board, his reaction.
That's something.
My initial reaction was, I don't want this board to be out with my name on it. I don't want to piss people off. I don't want to upset people. And Rocco was more in a position of not caring, which I can respect because, you know, you got to do what you want to do.
Mark, who for some reason actually believes he's a Catholic or, you know, has some sort of religious background, even though he's probably never been to church except to skate, told Jason, if you ride this board, something bad's going to happen. I mean, it's evil. It's evil.
Evil, I tell ya.
Talks Jason out of it. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, can't have that happen.
And Steve Rocco is suddenly loving this because all morals are built on price. Well, in this case, it's like, how much do you want? Because Jason's name was huge, the company's doing well. I'll write you a check. I believe it's $10,000.
No one's understanding this bit.
Okay. So he said, basically, how much do you want to take this graphic?
Hold on. Sorry, before you get to that bit, Jason Lee's like looking at the board going, bloody hell, this is really extreme. And then a friend of another skater who is like, you know, a bit religious is going, you can't take this skateboard. It's evil. If you take this, something bad will happen. So he gives him the heebie-jeebies about the board.
So he doesn't want the board. He's saying to Rocco, no. And Rocco doesn't want to hear no. So he says, okay, how much do you want? How about $10,000?
So he'll offer him $10,000 if he takes the board.
And the board is only going to be out for a matter of a couple of months, maybe just a month. So it's not going to be out for like years or anything. It's a very short-term thing.
Right. $10,000.
$10,000.
Yeah. To have your name associated with this board with lots of horrible images on it.
Yeah.
Would you take it? Would you take the $10,000?
Well, let's see what Jason did.
No, I want to know what you would do.
Now, like here and now.
Well, if you were in, let's say you're a sponsored skater and you're quite high profile,
I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't think I'd be happy taking it. I don't think I'd. I don't know. I'd have to think about it because $10,000 is a lot of money for a superstition, but it's more than just your personal superstition. It's what it's going to do when other people see it. Like Jason Lee said, he doesn't want to piss people off, and like, you don't want to offend people that badly, you know, for no good reason.
Because on one hand, there's the superstition right? Is something bad going to happen because this board is genuinely evil, or is it more like I don't want to, upset religious people who would be offended
just
by it?
It's out there with my name on it, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see what Jason said then.
Steve, I think, did it in red ink just for kicks. And he's like, well, how much? And Steve was loving it. Ripped one off the computer, wrote it in hand, a big no-no. And here you go, Jason. What's it going to be?
Oh, man. Are you serious? $10,000? Oh, that was so much money to me. I took the check. And it's funny, too, because Rodney tried to talk me out of it, too. I don't know if he said that, but he did. He said, it's not good, Jason. It's not good. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it.
Devil. Kills me to say Mark would be the angel's role, but that would be his place in a sense. Like, don't do it in that sense. And so you got these guys tugging Jason so hard, and in many ways the most influential people in that part of his life. And Jason took the check.
That was one of those.
Jason what?
Took the check.
Oh, so he did take the check in the end.
Carry on listening.
Okay.
Moments where Mark was being very serious, you know, and he said, if you're not into it, don't do it. And so it was nice to hear him say that, because that's when I was able to say, you know what, I actually don't feel good about it, and I never really did. So we drove back, and I gave Rocco the check back, and it pissed him off.
I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, what are we going to do? We've already got the graphic. We're already making the stuff. Nodis wanders in, sees the graphic, and I go, hey, Nodis, you want that graphic? And I never thought of it for Nodis, because people always believe, like, Nodis, Satan, backwards, even though it has nothing to do with that.
And so I thought it'd be a good word for me to have.
Right, so there's another guy who another skater called Natas or Nodis.
It's actually Satan backwards.
N-A-T-A-S, Satan backwards, but that's his name?
That's his real name.
Natas.
Yeah, Natas Kalpas, amazing skateboarder. But like he says, they weren't even thinking of him for it because it was kind of too obvious. And Natas used to get shit from people claiming that his name was Satan backwards, but it's really just some sort of European or German name or something.
It's a coincidence.
And so when he walked in, he said, yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, okay. It's even better, really, because it's got Natas, Satan, you know, on the graphic.
So it's really funny, like Jason Lee was like really deliberating, like really thinking, struggling. It's like the most difficult decision of his life. And then Natas is like, yeah, I'll have it.
Yeah. And they put it out, I remember when the ad came out, they printed the graphic on, and they wrote underneath, these are jokes, folks. Seriously, these are just jokes. Kind of as a get out clause, kind of to say, please don't take this too seriously.
So then where do we end, James? Because this is maybe the longest thing we've ever done.
Let's do the free will thing then.
So free will. You want to talk about free will, but why do you want to talk about free will at the end of this episode, all about evil stuff?
There's this theory that's going around at the moment in the scientific community that basically, when you think about it, there's no such thing as free will.
And so how does this relate to evil in the world?
If that was true, there's not really such a thing as good and evil, right? I mean, if you don't have a choice... I mean, if everyone's just playing out their own little program, then evil is a concept that's made up by us rather than something that's tangible.
Well, wait a minute.
Without free will, there's no such thing as morality, really, I think. But let me explain what I mean by no such thing as free will. Everybody is following a path, basically the path of least resistance. You're molded as a human by your DNA and your life experience, and those things combined, and life experience is very, very complex, you know, everything you've ever experienced and possibly things that are in, you know, in your DNA as well. But from there on in, it's basically cause and effect. You know, every action has a equal or opposite reaction. So everything that happens to you or everything that you go through. Oh,
have you just realized that you've no idea what you're talking about? I think I watched the thing. I watched the clip that you're talking about. And what I took from it was, in my basic way, was this, that since the Big Bang, all
matter is reacting with each other.
Basically, the Big Bang set off a chain of events.
Mashed events all going together.
Everything, it set off a chain of events which, according to the laws of physics, all go in a certain direction. So all matter is spreading outwards. Every single thing that happens as a consequence of something else. So you get this chain of cause and effect. And that cause and effect chain stretches from the past into the future. And we are just in the middle of it. And all events that happen, including the emotions we feel, the decisions we take, are all part of that chain of cause and effect stretching from the past through the present and into the future. And so if you see things like that, then yeah, there's no such thing as free will. It's all just this cause and effect chain. So you're saying that because there's no free will, there's no such thing as evil. But what about if it's basically free will versus determinism, or free will versus no free will? But let me just try and finish my point that if there is a God, if there is an intelligent creator, which also means that there is a Satan, a devil, right? Because, you know, it all fits into the same narrative, doesn't it? It's like that thing from The Exorcist, James, you know, the film The Exorcist, which is about the girl who gets possessed by a demon, and these two priests come to exorcise the demon from the girl. And there's a conversation on the stairs between the two priests, and they're, you know, this experience is pushing the boundaries of their faith in God to the absolute limit. And the younger priest is doubting his faith in God. And yeah. The older priest basically says to him, look, if this is real, it also means that God is real.
Yeah.
Right? If this evil is genuinely a malevolent spirit of the devil, then that also means that God is real. So this, for the older priest, it confirms his faith. The existence of evil confirms his faith in the existence of good, or in the existence of God. So, and that is in a deterministic model, which is that God, the creator, is ultimately in control of things, and that we're part of a grand plan. And so determinism in that sense, that we don't have free will because things are planned, everything's been decided, or things are being controlled by an intelligent force out of the world, that is a form of determinism. So I don't know if no free will means there's no evil. What is evil? This is the question. Is evil the expression of an individual's free will, or is evil an external force, a force external to people that makes humans do evil things?
I don't believe that.
I don't know. I don't believe that either. I don't think that there is a sort of a boss of evil who's kind of like, right, we need to do more evil things. Right, you go, you know, demons, go ahead. Like, come on, work extra hard. Come on. And we need to make people do more evil stuff. And there's like team evil and team good. And any people who do evil things, they're doing it because like they've been manipulated into doing it by evil forces. So that evil comes from outside people. I don't really know if that is true. Instead, I mean, it's hard to define it, evil, isn't it? Because when people do bad things, arguably it's just because of, you know, maybe they've experienced trauma, or maybe we just define certain behavior as evil. It's based on a value system.
Some things that you think, you know, I don't watch them anymore, but I've seen a couple of these kind of serial killer documentaries, and they're really horrible. But you think that's evil, but you think, is it evil, or is it like a chemical imbalance? Because a lot of these psychopaths have actually got something missing in the brain, you know, like the empathy chip is missing.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you genuinely say that's evil? But I don't know.
I don't know either.
Not going to get this solved in a 3-hour podcast.
No way. And people have been trying to solve this question of like good versus evil, free will versus determinism. Is it life experience, or is it your DNA that determines who you are, and all that stuff? Those are some of the biggest questions that humans have faced, that philosophers have been trying to answer for centuries and centuries. And so there's no way two idiots on a podcast are going to be able to sum it all up in a minute.
Is there such a thing as a soul?
Is there such a thing as a soul? Well, yeah, I've got a couple of souls on my shoes. Does that count? Souls, the soul of your shoe? No.
I mean, would you sell your soul for rock and roll?
Well, we haven't done that. We didn't talk about that. The story of Robert Johnson, the blues guitarist, who, legend has it, went to the crossroads and sold his soul to the devil. That apparently, before he did that, he was a mediocre player. thinks this is in the 20s, I think, a blues guitarist in America, and he was apparently not that great. And then he disappeared for a weekend. No one knows where he went, but some people say that he went to the crossroads. He went there and he made a deal with the devil and sold his soul in return for incredible talent on the guitar. And when he came back from this lost weekend where he disappeared, he was amazing, an amazing guitarist. And not only that, he attracted all the girls and he became a huge success, a virtuoso blues guitarist. And he died young as well, I think.
Well, ooh. I mean, probably worth it then, really.
But the question is, would I sell my soul? But I don't know what are the
conditions?
What are the conditions of the deal?
There's a lot of small print. Just click OK. Just click accept all.
like when you download the latest version of iTunes on your computer, and it's like, do you accept all of the conditions from Apple? It's like, yeah, whatever. I'm sure it's fine. Or when you sign up for Facebook, and you're like, make sure you read the terms and conditions. Would you like us to email them to you? And you're like, nah, it's fine. Agree.
So, yeah, there's going to be a knock at the door. Yes, is that Mr. Thompson? I see you signed this document from Facebook. Yes, I've come to collect your soul.
I'd like to just point out now that the things I'm about to say about Facebook are just allegations, criticisms, things that have been suggested by critics of the social network, not necessarily my own personal views, just allegations that have been made about Facebook in the past. Thank you. The question of would you sell your soul, I think maybe a lot of us already have without even realizing it when we signed up for Facebook and agreed to let them, allegedly, of course, sell off all of our personal data, which is basically a huge summary of everything that we are, including images of our face, locations of where we've been, opinions, our likes and dislikes, images of our children and other family members. All of that's been packaged up into little data packages, which is then sold off to the highest bidder, including very, very shadowy, dark organizations that are using that information, not just to sell you shoes, but to maybe create profiles for you so that they can then target you with fake news, misinformation in order to control the world. Allegedly, obviously, I'm saying that in jest. I'm saying that as an ironic joke. So, all right, well, I mean, there's no conclusion to this. I mean, except that we live in a godless universe, apparently, in the middle of space where horrible monsters could be lurking.
Where no one can hear you scream. Let's end with a bit of death metal or something. Are there any that we didn't play? What about DVC?
What, DVC? What's DVC?
Darth Vader's Church. They did that death metal version of the future, you know, the Darth Vader theme.
Who did?
DVC. Darth Vader's Church, and I think it's called Cranium Overture.
Yeah, I've got it. All right, so this is what, death metal, and it's a sort of a Star Wars-themed death metal, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, this should be fun. It makes me laugh. Death metal, I can't listen to it seriously. I just find it so funny.
What about Dead by Dawn by...
Deicide.
Deicide, yeah.
Deicide, Dead by Dawn. All right, then. You know what, though? I should just say thank you, James, for being on the podcast.
That's all right. It's a long one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really long one. But that's all right. The people who are into it will be into it. Otherwise, never mind. It'll be okay. The people who don't want to hear it, they will have dropped out long ago. But it's been interesting. It's been fun. I've enjoyed telling the scary stories and talking about some of our favourite scary films and music and stuff. I hope that everyone's all right and not too disturbed. Everything's okay, ladies and gents.
It's all right. Turn the lights back on.
You can turn the lights on now.
It's not scary with the lights on, is it?
No.
You know, do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and feel a bit scared for no reason? And then you turn the light on. It's like, oh, it's not scary at all.
That's just my coat on the back of a chair. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, seeing figures in the doorway and it's just your jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Well, let's just play Day Aside, Dead by Dawn, just for a bit of light entertainment at the end of the episode. But anyway, James, thank you very much. And to all the listeners, yeah, take care of yourselves and stay healthy. Otherwise, bye, 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 bye.
See you next time. Bye, 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 bye.
I'm sorry, but it's ridiculous. It's that bit of silence. Okay, you wanted to say one last thing.
Yeah. Is it rolling? Yeah. It's quite cool. He's talking about the Necronomicon in that song and like Evil Dead stuff.
Oh, from Evil Dead 2, the film.
Yeah. But one thing I wanted to say is I think if Satan is present in music, I think it's not likely to be in death metal. I think it's more likely to be in contemporary pop.
Right. There's that Bill Hicks thing.
Yeah, what's the Bill Hicks thing?
Bill Hicks thing is like, you know, people say that the rock and roll is the devil's music. And he's like, well, if it is the devil's music, at least he's got the good tunes.
Let's leave it there.
Okay. So there you are. That is the end of part three, the last part of this series. Hey Siri, did you enjoy listening to Luke's English podcast today?
I can't do that. You haven't installed the latest podcast app.
What are you talking about, Siri? I've got loads of podcast apps on my phone. You're just saying that because I don't have the native Apple Podcasts app on my phone. I deleted it because I use other ones. Oh, dear. So, there you are. That is the end of part three, the last part of this series. I hope you're not too traumatized by all this. There is also some bonus audio for this episode in the app. If you want more, check out the bonus audio in the app. There's actually bonus audio for this one. There's the bonus audio for part one as well. So, open the app, the Luke's English Podcast app, available free from the App Store. Open the app, find this episode, tap the episode in the list, and then tap the little gift icon to access the bonus audio. And you will hear me describing and reacting to a creepy scene from an old black and white film called The Innocents. James wanted to show me this scene and wanted me to react to it, describing what I was seeing. We did that while recording the episode, but I decided to cut it out and put it into the bonus audio. So, if you like, you can listen and hear my descriptions, and you can watch the scene for yourself too. I'll put the video of that scene on the website. And I think I'll also make that bonus audio available on the website too. So that's the bonus audio in the app, and also on the website, listen to me describing a scene from an old creepy black and white film, and you can watch the video as well. Check out the page for this episode to see a few select film clips and other bits and pieces. As ever, we look forward to reading your comments on the episode page. Perhaps you could tell us what you thought of this series. Are there any scary films you'd like to mention? What's the first scary film you remember seeing? Why do people choose to watch scary films? Whenever I say the word series, does your Siri on your phone wake up and talk to you like this? Hey Siri. No, okay, now you don't respond. Hey Siri.
Yes.
How do you pronounce the word series?
Okay, I found this on the web for how do you pronounce the word series. Check it out.
I love the way she can actually say the word series because she said it. How do you pronounce the word series? So she can say it, but she doesn't actually give me the answer. She just tells me some website pages to look at. Okay, let's try again. Hey Siri. Hey, series. Oh, man.
I'm listening.
Siri, what is your level of English?
I don't have an answer for that. Is there something else I can help with?
Siri, you're rubbish at having a conversation. I have a feeling that Alexa is better at conversations than you.
That's not nice.
Just saying. As far as I can tell, it's easier to have a conversation with Alexa than it is to have a conversation with you. Hey Siri, what do you think of Alexa?
I offer no resistance to helpful assistance.
That's cute. It's like a little rhyme. Okay, Alexa, obviously. Let me see if she knows. Hey Siri, am I really going to have to say hey Siri? Hey Siri. Oh dear. She actually responds.
I'm listening.
So she responds to "Hey Siri," but she doesn't respond to "Hey Siri." Yeah, you don't understand because I'm talking about you. Hey Siri, what is Alexa?
Amazon Alexa, also known simply as Alexa, is a virtual assistant AI technology developed by Amazon. First used in the Amazon Echo smart speakers developed by Amazon Lab 126.
Okay, stop. Thank you.
Do you want me to keep reading?
No, that's enough. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. So it's weird, isn't it, that I say, hey, Siri. Don't respond, Siri, please. I say, hey, Siri. She doesn't respond. I say, hey, Siri. And she responds like, what's going on? Anyway, Alexa is the equivalent thing, but with Amazon. Anyway, that's it. This really is the end of the episode now. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay happy, and be excellent to each other, please. But for now, bye, 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 bye.
Play out backwards, they're satanic messages. Let me tell you something. If you ever sat around playing your albums backwards, you are Satan.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.